recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
Alright, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this Monday night. Ian Blair on the board and doing a great job of it, Ian. I got to let you know. And, well, we along the Gulf Coast now preparing for a hurricane. Hurricane Sally has officially, well, will soon be heading this way, still heading northwestwards in the Gulf. And, of course, you can check in with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, who has tropical updates twice an hour, every hour. And then tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and myself, we'll have him on to give us his latest update tomorrow morning. And then the same thing through Jeff Poor Show from 9 to noon and the midday show from noon to 2. But I'll give you a quick update, the latest from the National Weather Service out of Mobile. And their latest update came at 4 p.m. So this is about 2 hours old at this point, but still very, very notable. Rainfall totals of 10 to 20 inches with localized amounts, they say here, of up to 25 inches possible across southeast Mississippi and coastal Alabama and northwest Florida. Now, we should start getting rain here over the next hour, and it looks like that's going to continue through a lot of the night, but landfall not actually expected until tomorrow afternoon. But we'll be catching a lot of this storm before then, and it's a Category 2 storm now. We should be getting hurricane-force winds tomorrow night especially, but the big thing to watch for our area, Mobile and Baldwin counties, will be the flooding. And with this storm system moving as slowly as it is, that it's going to dump just tons and tons of rain over our area. We're already under a flash flood watch through Thursday morning. They did upgrade us from a tropical storm warning earlier in the day into a hurricane warning around noon today. So it is coming this way, and we can expect a lot of rainfall in Mobile and Baldwin counties. And those outer bands, if they're not already showing up in your area, they should be showing up soon. And you can check out staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams' latest full update on our website, fmtalk1065.com, and we'll be talking with him tomorrow morning multiple times. Same for Jeff Porcho and Midday Mobile tomorrow. But got a lot to keep your eye on, and hopefully you're preparing right now for, well, they always say prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So maybe you're listening to us as you're preparing the house for this Category 2 hurricane that looks to be heading towards us tomorrow afternoon. Corey, how you doing this Monday night?
Man, I'm blessed by the best, Dalton. Again, want to wish everybody the best in this dangerous, dangerous storm, and want to make sure everybody is well prepared as you're probably in your cars listening to us on your way to the grocery store perhaps. But it's a exciting time in sports. Glad to have the full gamut of sports back here nationally.
Yeah, and we got a lot of football to talk about, and we'll do that here in just a second. But first, I've got to play you this call of the week, maybe call of 2020 already at this point. And we were talking about the video, which was available to everyone on Friday night after Hillcrest Tuscaloosa did the unbelievable and won against Wetumpka on one of those keep throwing the ball back plays until you get into the end zone. And then today I came across the call, the actual play-by-play call from the Hillcrest Tuscaloosa booth. You're not going to want to miss this.
All right, 2.9 seconds left. Ethan Crawford takes the snap, swings it out to Marcus Wilkins. Marcus makes a move at the 50, pitches it out, and the Terrence Callaway has it at the 40.
He makes a couple moves. He
pitches it back.
Another way, Marcus.
It's called by Marcus Wilkins. Now it's to... Oh, another pitch out. This one to Ethan Crawford. Ethan running around. Ethan pitches it out to Andre Seiler. Andre looks for a move, doesn't get it. Here's a pitch. Ethan Crawford gets it. He's at the 40-yard line. He makes a move. He pitches it back. It's caught by Andre Seiler at the 40. Seiler now running around. Seiler makes a pitch. No. Now pitches it back to Ethan. Oh, Ethan pitches it back to Andre.
There it is.
It's fumbled on the ground. It's picked up by an offensive lineman.
It's
and
still
going. Oh. And with Ethan Crawford with the ball.
He's going to
the
30,
the 25, the 20, the 50. Yeah. Touchdown, Patriots. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. I have never seen anything like that before. Hillcrest wins.
my God!
Hillcrest wins!
NFHS Network! Max
59 yards!
Wow.
Multiple pitch!
Holy cow!
Touchdown by the Hillcrest Patriots!
See you on ESPN! ESPN! Top 10!
Oh my
ESPN
goodness.
Top 10!
Absolute mayhem!
All right, there you go. The call of... is it safe to call that the call of the year right now?
Easy. Easy, Dalton. I mean, on Saturday morning, the Prep Sports Report, when we were talking about, hey, look, you really need to follow us on the Facebook page or look on my Twitter as to actually what occurred, the audio on that is even better than the video itself.
I mean,
that is a phenomenal finish. And like I said, the only thing that was missing was the band on the field, but that was absolutely haywire.
Yeah, and I've got to find out who those two men are that called the Hillcrest Tuscaloosa games. And, you know, they were holding it together there at the beginning, especially the play-by-play guy was the glue in that scenario. And whoever is on color commentary lost his mind whenever that road opened up and they were free and clear to score the touchdown. I encourage you to watch the video, but nothing is as good as that call from the Hillcrest Tuscaloosa game.
Classic. I mean, classic finish. And I think that'll be one of the things that is definitely worth an ESPY award for the finish. And not only that, you're looking at a high school football game with 9 laterals that were done to win the game. Just you can't explain it, and they did their best to put it into words.
So we've got a lot of big boy football to talk about tonight, but I felt that call there deserved top spot on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. So let's talk about some of these college games from this weekend, and of course the NFL got started with Week 1, and we're getting very close to the NBA Finals and the NHL Finals. But Corey, got to get your take. You were in there. Hancock-Whitney Stadium, very first game for South Alabama. Let's leave the game out of it for right now. Your first impressions, and I'll tell you what I thought the stadium looked like from the television standpoint.
The stadium is second to none. I mean, you look at the Jumbotron, even the 6,000 fans, if that were in there, made it electric. The LED lights, being able to flicker during the introductions, the fireworks that go off, the replays, just the on-campus feel, looking out the press box, seeing the rest of the sorority and fraternities, a great feeling and atmosphere in South Alabama.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it showed on TV, and there might not have been 6,000 people in the stadium, but it sounded like there were more. Jags fans really made some noise on Saturday night, and we'll talk about that game here when we get back from the break. Tulane coming back and beating the South Alabama Jaguars 27-24. On Saturday night. We'll get into that one. Also, the first ACC and Big 12 games of the year and a new AP Top 25 poll already out, and Bama and Auburn moving ahead some. So we'll get back on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 and discuss this weekend in college football and a whole lot more.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty with you. And that Auburn promo reminds me, this week we're back. Tiger Talk with Andy Burcham, Brad Law, and Auburn Tigers head coach Gus Malzahn gets started again this Thursday at 6 p.m., and that'll be followed by Tiger Talk Overtime with our very own Doug Holton. And then we have just a week and a few days from Thursday night before the start of the SEC season with Auburn hosting Kentucky at 11 a.m. on September 26th, and then Alabama playing at Missouri, I believe, 6 p.m. on September 26th. So the SEC is on its way, but this weekend the Power 5 got involved with the ACC and Big 12. We'll get into those games in just a second. First off, as we finish up talking about the new Hancock-Whitney Stadium and how I thought it looked outstanding on ESPN2, even though they started the game on ESPN News, but it looked great on ESPN 2 and News on Saturday night. And you can really tell, even though Ladd Peebles Stadium has that vintage feel, there's been so many great not only games but events held in Ladd Peebles Stadium. You can tell that's a stadium that was made decades ago, and with this new Hancock-Whitney Stadium, they made it in the age of TV, and the field looked outstanding. The logo pops more on that turf. We did have someone text in and ask Corey. They said, I would have liked to see more of the LED lights during the game and hope to get the scoreboard working before the next game. So was there some issues with the that big video board?
It was trying to update the stats sometimes throughout the game, but I guarantee with me working where they are actually doing the stats and the scoreboard, being right there in press row in our own little booth. They are continuing to work on that, and it was the first game to where a little few glitches, yeah. But overall, I think that it was spectacular. And the LED lights, again, I did not know that the stadium had the flickering LED lights.
Just like Bama has now
just
and
like
Auburn.
That. And it, I mean, it was just tremendous. The running ribbon opposite the press box was pretty cool, and the stats on the scoreboard, just everything that you would want to be 2020 feel-wise. Yeah. South's done a great job.
Well, I tell you what, it looked outstanding on TV. I only wish they could have had 25,000 in the stadium this time instead of the 6,000 that were allowed, but that'll come. Our time will come to see a full Hancock-Whitney Stadium. But let's talk a little bit about the game, because it was looking great for the South Alabama Jaguars, at least through the first half. They end up falling to Tulane 27-24, and South actually took a 24-6 lead midway through the third quarter, but after that, that Tulane rushing game that was so good last year really put it all together. Three rushing touchdowns from the Green Wave after South went up 24-6, and then the Jags, of course, lose their first game of the season. Now, some big movement behind the center. Backup Jags quarterback Chase Lovertich ended up taking over quarterback for Desmond Trotter, and Lovertich had a decent night, threw for 249 yards and two touchdowns in the loss. But the thing that stood out most to me, and I believe the main reason that South lost the game, of course, it would have been nice to stop a run here or there at the towards the end of the game, but they could not stop that Tulane pass rush. And they've got some guys that, even if they're not NFL ready on the Tulane side, they are NFL size. And some of these edge rushers they had coming through, it was too much for any of these South Alabama offensive linemen to block one-on-one. That seemed to be a huge issue as the game got later and later.
Cameron Sample is one of those defensive ends that you're speaking out of, being recognized by Jim Nagy prior to the game as a player to watch. And in the third, midway through the third quarter and all the way through the fourth quarter, he absolutely dominated South Alabama's offensive line. He was in the backfield every single play on first, second, and third down, disrupting the passer as well as the running game of South Alabama. So he really stepped up to the plate, and to me that was the difference. South Alabama's inability to create a rushing game or a rushing attack in the second half.
Yeah, and maybe it's because there's more pieces of that Tulane line you have to worry about, but it seemed like they were singling up Sam a whole lot in that game, and that seems like something you just can't do against a guy who looks to be nearly NFL ready. I did notice on the positive side, South's kicker Diego Gallardo, who is a Daphne Trojan alum, he looked a whole lot more consistent Saturday night. I thought the first game against Southern Miss, he did not look good and missed a couple and got away with a good win from South, but Saturday night the kicker looked much better. Unfortunately, South couldn't get him into range there at the end to try and tie the game, but the ball looked much, much better coming off his foot, which is important when you're going to play in as many tight games as hopefully South will this year.
One of the strangest calls that is a legal call, the leaping penalty on South Alabama that absolutely killed the drive or the hope to get the football back. The Green Wave were able to milk the clock and go ahead and run it down, but it was by rule and by textbook, it was the correct call. Now, do you have to be a little bit more heads up in that situation? Absolutely. Was he going to block the punt anyway? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But in that situation, you would have liked to seen South Alabama get the ball and have an opportunity to drive down the field and kick that game-time field goal or score a touchdown, because they had kind of put the in neutral a little bit in the second half offensively and sputtered. But that fourth quarter not scoring hurt.
Well, I love the effort from the player that was trying to block that punt. And you're right, that's a rule you don't – I'm not sure they're thinking about that rule constantly as they practice week in and week out. But what they're trying to avoid is a situation where the legs get taken out from under that defensive player and they come down on the top or back of their head. And you look at the still photos from that leap, and he was certainly in that kind of situation, even though everything turned out fine. Should the referees maybe have given them a little bit of leeway there at the end of the game? I don't know. It depends on how you like your referees. If you want them to call it consistently and call it right the entire game, then that was the right call. If they had let other things slide throughout the game and then decided to call that, then you might have an issue with it. But to me, it seems that early on in the season, officials aren't doing as bad of a job as I thought they would, given the lack of preparation time and lack of ability to go out and call practices with teams. Officials have been doing a decent job. Still, you hate to see the game go away on a call like that. Let's talk quarterback position a little bit here with Lovertich coming in, and his record going into this game as a starter, 58-1, and that includes, I think, high school games, and then he bounced around a little bit, ended up at the Mississippi Junior College that is so well known from that series on Netflix. But he ended up coming in. Seemed like Desmond Trotter, even though Trotter had a pretty good game one against Southern Miss, he was putting the ball in places where the Eagles could easily come down with it. Some dangerous situations where he was throwing that ball, and he just kind of lacks the zip on some of those passes, whether they're to the opposite sideline. You know, when he's really got to put some oomph on the ball, Trotter's balls seem to kind of flutter out there a little bit, and it seems like Lovertich certainly has the stronger arm. But with the two best athletes on the field playing the receiver position for South Alabama in Kwon Baker and Jalen Tolbert, what you need is somebody who can get them the ball, and they're just playing so well right now at wideout. I think Campbell made the move there with Lovertich just because of his ability to get the ball out there, and he was taking some chances too. He had a couple really good long balls that the receivers weren't able to get under, and a few they were able to get under. But with Trotter coming out, Lovertich coming in, I think this might be something we see throughout the course of this season, a lot of swap in those two quarterbacks.
You just want, if you're South Alabama, the Jaguars, Trotter can beat you with his legs, and it's shown that. But you do have three dynamic wide receivers, and you had another wide receiver in Kwon Baker with over 120 yards receiving with that touchdown, and Tolbert was knocking at the door to have 100 yards receiving, came up with 99. So you have the playmakers to throw him the football. It's just a matter in the first half, Lovertich really felt confident in the pocket. He completed those passes that he needed to, and as soon as he started getting pressure in the second half, it's almost like his confidence, he started short-arming some balls. Mm-hmm. And you're right, I don't know if there's going to be a quarterback controversy or not, because again, I don't know if Trotter is necessarily injured.
I think he is a little banged up.
And that's a situation that I know Coach Campbell will keep an eye on. And the good thing is the Jags have a bye week to prepare for UAB. But a good showing coming off the bench, and that's what you want to see, being explosive offensively the way that South Alabama came out in the first half and was, and really in the third quarter also, scoring 10 points in the third quarter. It's just, it makes you wonder why they weren't able to do anything in the fourth quarter.
And this game, Tulane, they're not a bunch of scrubs from over there in New Orleans, and it should be noted that after South got the Southern Miss head coach fired last week, Jay Hobson, who resigned from the team after losing to the Jags, Tulane turned around and gave their head coach, I think, a six-year extension after they beat the Jags. So one way or the other, if you play the Jags, something is happening with your contract after the game.
I will say this, like my mom told me and just texted me, that Carlos Davis did have a good game rushing hard and receiving out of the backfield. So if you're able to get that type of versatility out of your backs, mm-hmm. also, it creates kind of a two-headed monster to where, all right, do I want to go ahead and bottle up these wide receivers, or do I want to try to stop the effectiveness of the backs coming out of the backfield also? But South Alabama's going to get better. You would have liked to seen them close the deal in that inaugural game.
It would have been
Hancock,
great. Yeah.
Whitney. It would have been icing, the cherry on top of it. But, you know, all things said, South Alabama has shown what they're capable of. Now they just have to get over the hump.
Yeah, well, they've got over a week now to prepare for UAB. They're going to play at UAB a week from Thursday, and Blazers, they should come into that game as the favorite. Just like South has been an underdog in their first two games, UAB should be, I would imagine, at least a double-digit favorite going into this one, even with the Blazers' loss at Miami on Thursday night, where Miami, even though, and we're seeing this with a lot of teams that are just playing their first games against some teams that have played one or two already, takes them about a half to kind of get in the groove of things. And for the Miami Hurricanes, and under new offensive coordinator Rhett Lashley, they really put things together and were running the ball well against UAB on Thursday night.
They did, and that's why I look forward to both of these teams kind of being equally matched. But overall, you look at what the Sun Belt Conference produced, playing eight games on Saturday, being 5-3, 3-0 against the Big 12. That's huge. And now you, if South Alabama would have won that game, possibly being 6-2. The Sun Belt definitely earned the recognition of being the Fun Belt for sure, Dalton.
Oh, and one of those games, a big upset. Louisiana Lafayette beat number 23-ranked Iowa State 31-4. 14, and the game was much closer at the half, but the Raging Cajuns scored the final 24 points of the game, and their speed just too much for the Cyclones. They got a punt return for a touchdown, a kick return for a touchdown, and believe it or not, this is the first time Lafayette's beat a top 25 opponent on the road. Before that game on Saturday, they'd gone 0-26 against ranked foes away from home. Their only other win over a top 25 team was when they played Texas A&M at home back in 1996. But the speed coming out of Louisiana Lafayette, you got a team in Iowa State that's built on hard work, plugging holes, you know, effort, effort, effort. But when you bring a team in with athletes like Louisiana Lafayette, they can turn a game just like that.
Goes back to what we're saying again, Eric Guerrer. From McGill Tulin made a difference in that game with a kickoff to the touchdown for a touchdown. So, just, you know, Mobile Baldwin County guys all over the country making a difference.
All right, when we get back, we'll talk about the new AP Top 25 poll. Also, some news from the Plains and news from Tuscaloosa as well. We've got a lot more coming up on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk. Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. And Ian, run the board for us. Give us a text or call, 251-343-0106. And Corey, a new Associated Press Top 25 poll released over the weekend, and the first that since they've taken out the teams that are right now not playing football. That means bye-bye Big Ten, bye-bye Pac-12 teams that were ranked, even some of those Mid-Atlantic teams that made their way to the Top 25. So now you've got a Top 25 of teams that are either already playing or, in the SEC's case, should be playing here in the next couple of weeks. And with the Big Ten, without the Big Ten, didn't matter for Clemson. Tigers remain ranked first with 60 of 61 first place votes, and they certainly looked like a top ranked team on Saturday as they absolutely put it to was it Wake Forest they beat on Saturday? Trevor Lawrence looks like the Heisman leader early on in the season anyway. Alabama moved up to number 2 in the latest poll. Oklahoma up to number 3. If you got to watch them beat Missouri State, congratulations. That means you spent $56 to watch Oklahoma beat Missouri State. They're followed by number 4, Georgia, and number 5, Florida. Then defending champion LSU, they got one first-place vote, but they come in ranked number 6. Notre Dame, after winning its ACC debut over Duke, is ranked 7th. They're followed by Auburn at number 8, Texas at 9, and Texas A&M 10th. Now, 8 SEC teams ranked in the top 25, with Tennessee moving up to number 15 and Kentucky tied for 23rd. That's ahead of the ACC, who has 7 schools, including Notre Dame, in the rankings. Only 3 Big 12 schools, by my count, which makes sense after what the Sun Belt did to those teams on Saturday. You also have 3 AAC teams, 2 Sun Belt Conference teams, and 2 independents in Army and BYU. And we were just talking about the great weekend the Sun Belt had. You have Louisiana Lafayette moving up to number 19 in the latest rankings, and Appalachian State at number 23. And it's been since 1943 the last time Louisiana Lafayette was ranked in the top 25.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the difference between the coaches poll and the AP poll, maybe Florida, Georgia is the only difference. Excuse me, Florida and LSU, the only real difference. Not really Auburn and Texas kind of flip-flop as to where they're going to be located in the AP and coaches poll. But overall, I think the biggest drop, and I thought this was one of the biggest jokes and one of the funniest things that I saw, the biggest drop in AP history was Ohio State going 2 out of the top 25.
Yeah. What happened to them?
What happened? No, I thought that was pretty funny. But with SEC play getting ready to start here in a couple of weeks, you have to assume that the SEC, again, is going to beat up on the SEC.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that can stop the SEC.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, Clemson looked really good Saturday. Oklahoma, they looked as good as expected against Missouri State. And Notre Dame over Duke, that was another good game. Texas absolutely crushed UTEP. North Carolina, they took care of business against Syracuse. But how about a team that completely underperformed what were already relatively low expectations? What's happening in Tallahassee, Corey? I mean, game one for new Seminoles head coach Mike Norvell, and they lose 16-13 to Georgia Tech. And this Tech team isn't the triple option Tech team of old that we all came to know and love. You had true freshman quarterback Jeff Sims. He came out against the Seminoles, DBU, right? He passed for 277 yards and a touchdown, and the Yellow Jackets have now already beaten Florida State four games in a row. What's happening in Tallahassee?
You know, I can relate, and I can empathize and sympathize for Florida State fans, because I know the Alabama Crimson Tide went through the exact same lull right there when you had Mike Shula as your head coach, and really from the end of the Dubose era, right around 99, all the way up until 07, 08, Alabama was just in the top 25, but really never consistently in the top 10. So I can understand how it can happen to a program.
Mm-hmm.
Since Bobby Bowden has left, they just have not had the type of success that you want. And it's not like they don't have the money or the resources to go out and hire that head coach. It's Florida State. It's the University of Alabama. So how and why are you struggling? I think it's just a matter of finding the right person to reinvigorate and getting that one recruiting class like Julio Jones's class was for the University of Alabama that turns that program back around. Texas hasn't been the same, but
right.
As far as Florida State is concerned, they'll turn the corner. It's just not fast enough.
Well, you're right. It's similar to Alabama, but I think even more recently, something that hits home close for me, they look like the Tennessee Volunteers looked like for a time. And still now Tennessee waiting to get out of that rebuild, and we'll see if Jeremy Pruitt is the guy to get them winning again in Knoxville. It looks good right now for the Volunteers, but this seems like for Florida State, they're going through kind of that time where the Vols got rid of Philip Fulmer, playing the role of Bowden in this case, and then cycled through some coaches that looked like they could be good, and then maybe one part of their game fell apart, whether it was on field or recruiting or strength and conditioning. Something just wasn't clicking for one coach after the other. And you had Derek Dooley, you had Lane Kiffin, who chose to leave Tennessee, you had Butch Jones, who was great at recruiting. He just wasn't recruiting the right type of guys and wasn't really able to put them in a position to succeed out there on the field. And, I mean, heck, look, Tennessee was ranked 1-2 SEC championship year over year, and then they go through a lull, and it's been more than a decade now where they're still trying to find that right guy. And just like Tallahassee, football may be the most important thing to them in that city. They have a ton of money. They're a blue-chip program, and they're willing to spend that money, but it's about finding the right guy. And so far, Mike Norvell is, after one game, now you got to give him a year or so,
sure.
But he is not looking like the right guy after one game against Georgia Tech.
And it's amazing how the blue bloods of college football go through these lulls, because I'm going to go and tell you about Michigan. You know, Michigan, when's the last national championship that Michigan's won?
It's been a while.
When's the last time Notre Dame got spanked by Alabama in the national championship? But when's the last time that they won a national championship? Maybe Lou Holtz era at the end of the 80s, okay? So these programs do go through these lulls till maybe they'll have 1 or 2 years. But being able to duplicate and replicate what Nick Saban has been able to do,
mm-hmm.
that's the golden standard now that everybody else is chasing.
Yeah.
Even Les Miles winning a national championship and having to go ahead and leave LSU after 2 or 3 years removed from winning a national championship, can you sustain the success? That's the biggest thing with these college programs. And Florida State, even though they've continued to put some NFL guys out there, they have not been able to sustain the success.
And that's a part of the issue also, or how high are your expectations for your school? Because you want to say, if you're a Michigan or a Florida State, that you should be in the national championship every year. But if you were in the national championship every year, you'd be either Clemson or Alabama, because those are the only two schools that are getting it done right now. I mean, even look at Georgia. As well as they've done under Kirby Smart, they're not happy with where they are, even after playing in a national championship and losing on a Tua Tagovailoa bomb in overtime. They're not who they want to be, and that leads to some upset fans when they're not getting where they want to be. So for Tennessee fans, for Michigan fans, and especially right now for Florida State fans, I would readjust some of those expectations and worry about how your school is going to build back from the bottom up and really get a good base in, and then have that Julio Jones come around that really helps turn that program around. But not good for Florida State, and waiting for some of these Florida State fans to start texting in any moment now. You talked about the Big Ten and how they're nowhere to be found on the AP Top 25 poll. Well, some big news over the weekend. Looks like the presidents and chancellors from the Big Ten Conference held two major meetings on Saturday and one on Sunday, and they're supposed to vote soon on whether or not they're going to begin the 2020 fall sports season earlier than they originally planned. The competition task force and university leaders met Saturday and Sunday. They had updated medical information, and that was presented along with potential return to play plans. So one of the dates they're looking at now for the Big Ten, a potential start date of October 17th. Now, if they do that, they should be able to get in at least 8-9 conference games before the College Football Playoff Committee makes those selections for the final four teams. I know that's what the Big Ten is angling for right now. Before then, though, they have to vote this through, and what that means, 60%, at least 60% of the Big Ten presidents and chancellors have to agree that they want to start the season. That means 9 of the 14 schools in the Big Ten have to approve of that action, and they held that vote a while back. Iowa, Ohio State, and Nebraska, the only schools that voted to play. So that means they have to flip at least 6 presidents or chancellors in order to play this year.
What's interesting is some of these states, the high schools are playing football, but there is no college football. So to me, the college would be at less of a risk from a football standpoint from obtaining the coronavirus than these high school students would. But I think when they reevaluate it, I think they jumped the gun last month when they made that decision, because things are ever evolving, ever changing with the testing and the effectiveness of a possible vaccine coming. But when you have these other schools that are able to play a 10-game conference schedule like the SEC and these other conferences that are able to play 8+4, it's going to be hard, Dalton, for me to sit here and say, how does the Big Ten jump in here late and be eligible for a college football national championship?
Well, right now it's all about Ohio State when it comes down to it. Possibly Michigan, maybe one of these teams that could sneak in. Penn State, perhaps. Maybe Wisconsin. But to me, this is all about getting Ohio State into the college football playoff. And how about the Pac-12? I mean, basically making no bones about it. Now they're talking about starting in mid to late November, which would not make them eligible for the college football playoff. But then again, do any of us expect a Pac-12 team to make it to the playoff this year?
No, sir.
So big movement in these two Power 5 conferences. And when we get back, some news from Tuscaloosa and Auburn as they prepare to start the SEC season here in a couple weeks.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. As always, I'm here with your host, Dalton Norwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair on hand. And as always, if you want to get in on the conversation, make sure to call or text us at 251-343-0106.
Very nice, Ian. I think we might have to start doing that every time.
There we go, Corey?
Boom!
Touchdown!
I love it. Great job, Ian. We're going to start coming into every segment like that. So you are our announcer from here on out. And, of course, we'll pull you in for some analysis as well. First off, of course, the biggest news topic right now, biggest issue for those of us along the Gulf Coast, Hurricane Sally, now a Category 2 and moving northwestward right now towards Louisiana, but they say that track is moving even farther eastward, so at some point it's going to make a little bit of a curve and head up towards Mississippi and head up towards our area. As of the latest update from the National Weather Service, they're saying, you know, this thing is moving so slow. I think last I checked, or at least midday today, it was moving at 7 miles an hour, and so that means it's going to be sitting on top of us for a long time down here on the Gulf. They're saying 15 to 20 inches of rain possible in Gulf Shore and along the coastline. Mobile, Baldwin counties, 10 to 15 inches of rain in the central and upper portions of both counties. Same for Pensacola, 10 to 15 inches of rain, but could end up being a lot more rain than that depending on how long the system sits on top of us. One thing that always ends up being deadly in these storms is the storm surge. And right now, from just about Pascagoula to Mobile Bay, they're expecting 6 to 9 foot of storm surge. And talking with Sean Sullivan earlier, anytime that storm surge gets to 7-8 feet, then you start to see I wouldn't say worry or panic, but definitely it gets the attention of some people who have ridden out some big storms in this area. So we should expect some hurricane force winds. They're sitting in Category 4 or a Category 5 like we've had in the past, but the flooding and the storm surge, something we really need to be cognizant of and prepare for over the coming days. So we'll keep you updated with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams all the way through this entire thing and even afterwards, because we have him on twice an hour every hour right here on FM Talk 106.5. Let's get into some Alabama and Auburn news and maybe talk a little bit of NFL if we get a chance here. But fall camp, Corey, officially over now. And the SEC teams are going to prepare for their season openers coming up on September 26th. Of course, you have Auburn hosting Kentucky in Game 1 and Alabama playing at Missouri. And to cap off fall camp, Bama had a 133-play scrimmage on Saturday at Bryant-Denny Stadium. And Saban afterwards had a lot of good things to say about the offense in that scrimmage. Less good things to say about how the defense played, but we already knew Mac Jones was the likely starter at quarterback to begin the season, and then after five-star freshman Bryce Young missed quite a bit of practice over the last few weeks, seems that Jones has really separated himself from the pack by an even wider margin. Your thoughts on that quarterback position?
I think Mac Jones is the guy to go with. I mean, he proved himself last year, but the biggest thing for me is defensively, like Coach Saban said, from a defensive back standpoint, from a linebacker standpoint, who's going to be the alpha dog on that defense is yet to be told. Dominating in the trenches is something Alabama did not do a year ago up to the Nick Saban standards, and that's where they have to get better, that pass rush. So I want to see how they improve against Missouri.
Yeah, and speaking of the Alabama defenses of the past, the Washington football team absolutely crushed Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday, and a lot of that was due to former Alabama players, including Jonathan Allen and some of those big boys along the defensive line. So they've had some big dogs in the past, and I know they've got big dogs on that roster, but now it's about figuring out who those big dogs will be, and it might take a couple weeks into the season before we figure that out. And then defensively, you know, Saban said that you know, they're not very experienced, they need better communication and maybe play a little more in sync with each other. But those are some of the kinks they'll work out, I'm sure, in that game one against the cupcake Missouri, who I guess if we're doing cupcake rankings, I'd say Missouri right now maybe the fourth or fifth easiest team to beat in the SEC, and that means they could very possibly win next Saturday, but we'll have to see about that. Auburn, meanwhile, they had five starters out of practice last week because of COVID-19 related issues. Coach Malzahn said on Saturday that they had only two new positive tests, but because of contact tracing, 10 players in total have been sidelined from practice because of the coronavirus or close contact with someone who's tested positive. Of course, he did not identify the players. We won't get any of that throughout the season. I guess you could probably guess if your favorite player doesn't show up to play on Saturday and they weren't battling any injuries that it's likely they tested positive or were around someone who tested positive. But the big news from Auburn over this weekend scrimmage, a couple freshmen really appear to have worked their way onto the field early. You have 6'4" wide receiver Xavion Capers. I said he's been really impressive throughout fall camp, and then that should add another weapon for Bo Nix to get the ball to. And then on defense, of course, they have to replace some big names on the Tigers defense like Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson. I guess true freshman's Ikevious Walker has really been turning some heads at defensive end. 6'4", 266 pounds, and listening to the defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele, sounds like they're going to try to play with him like they did Marlon Davidson over the last couple years. Line him up on the outside some, line him up inside, and really just try to get him to the quarterback. But we're talking about a 6'4", 266-pound freshman who's already getting reps with the first team. And then you'll love this, Corey. Former Williamson Tiger Roger McCreary getting a lot of praise for his work at cornerback. Looks like he is going to be CB number one on the depth chart. A junior this year, should have a pretty strong hold on one of those positions at cornerback.
Roger McCreary Jr., just an outstanding, phenomenal athlete from Williamson High School here in Mobile, Alabama. Looking for great things. He got a lot of reps and a lot of downs played last year for the Auburn Tigers and made some great plays for them also. But he's a dynamic playmaker, was so in high school, played on both sides of the football as well as special teams. So anytime you're able to play all three positions or all three phases of the game in high school and then go to college and get the development that you want to, he's a guy that's going to step into the shoes of Noah Igbinoghene, thank you, who's now in the NFL. He'll step into those shoes, and he learned from one of the best. So I look for him to make an impact for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, and Auburn recently, they've been putting some defensive backs into the league, and whether or not they've been sticking around is another story, but you got to have enough talent to make it on a team to begin with, and Auburn has certainly been sending some of their D-backs into the NFL. Really quickly, we'll get into the NFL for a second here, but got to give a shout-out. Stuart Sink, won the Safeway Open PGA Tour event this weekend. Won it at 21 under par, and he is a close friend of FM Talk 106.5, related to our, he's first cousins with our very own Celeste Holland. And what was cool about this weekend, first off, it was Stewart's first win in 11 years, his ninth on the tour, but his son Reagan was actually his caddy this weekend. And it was a big fourth round from Stewart Cink. Shot a final round 7 under par and finished 2 shots ahead of second place. So big congratulations to Stewart Cink. And we're going to try to get him on the show here in the next few weeks to talk about what life has been like on the PGA Tour during COVID-19.
And congratulations to Stu. And before I get and we get out of here, I got to give props to Neil Farrell from Mobile, Alabama, opting back in for the LSU Tigers. Forgot to mention that a moment ago when we were talking college football. So Neil Farrell opted out for family reasons, now is opting back in for the LSU Tigers. So that's huge for them, as they've had so many guys leave and opt out, whether to go to the league or for COVID reasons.
Yeah, tonight got a couple NFL games for Monday Night Football. I know right now Pittsburgh and the New York Giants are playing game one of the doubleheader. Henry Ruggs had a big catch for the Las Vegas Raiders on Sunday, almost got into the end zone. Tonight, though, I know you've got your eyes on one wide receiver in particular, plays for the Denver Broncos. And with Cortland Sutton likely sitting out tonight, that moves Jerry Jeudy up the depth chart. He'll be catching balls from Drew Lock. Think he has a big night tonight?
Special route runner. He'll have maybe 3 or 4 catches. And if you let him get in the open space, he's taking it to the house.
Should be a good one. And we didn't even get into the NFL games this weekend. And how about young Joey Burrow? They didn't get the win. Cincinnati doinked one off the, I think it went off the post at the very end of the game, but Joe Burrow looked great, and so did so many other rookies that were playing this weekend. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more next week on Sports Night, but that does it for us tonight. Remember, check in tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings for the latest on Hurricane Sally.